Blog Talk Radio. Well, good Tuesday evening, people. How are you today? I'm feeling really excited. My tea has just stopped. My water is ready now, so it would do that as soon as I go on air. I'm going to have a good time with you guys today, and I'm just excited to be here. Last week, I had to replay a show because I got really busy. Don't know. I'm trying to work out the schedule where I don't have to, you know, I can kind of juggle it and be available for you guys on Tuesday since this is my commitment now. But sometimes when I have to do some other things and I can't be in two places at once, I love it that you guys still support and still, you know, tune in. I see that I had like 25 archives from the show last week, which is great. That means 25 of my loyal people still tuned in to hear a repeat show. But so today what I wanted to do was I have a young lady who I've been trying to get on the air, Ramona Muhammad, and she's a coach, a life coach for women. And so we will definitely have her on next week. We keep juggling. She gets busy. I get busy. And so I was going to have her on, but we did not prepare for the show for this week. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do what I love doing. So I either, you guys know that I'm going to school for my doctorate degree, praise God, and my dissertation is going to be on domestic violence and the church. And so one of my main focuses lately has been researching domestic violence. So and it's been interesting this week that I've had several people approach me with the content of bias research. And it's been interesting. It just had me really think about that because they're saying that because I lost my daughter, LaCrissa Davis, to domestic violence in 08. And the thought is that I'm like really close to that topic. And so will I form a bias? Do I already have a bias towards people not getting help and that kind of situation? And God just really helped me with that and just helped me understand that what he puts close to your heart, there's a saying that your misery usually is your ministry. And so my comeback to that, my rebuttal to say to that statement was that it's up to me to study to show myself approved. It's up to me to be the workman that is not going to be embarrassed or ashamed and to rightly divide the word of truth. And so in so doing, in my secular learning as well as in my biblical learning, it's my responsibility that if I want to be coined doctor, parrot, and have people respect me for what I'm going to be saying to them, then it's my duty to not come in with a bias because not everybody's situation is the same, and the answer to everybody's situation may not be the same answer. And so that being the case, you know, I thank God. And then my pastor preached a phenomenal word this week, Pastor Robert McCottro, of the New Dimensions Church, 5440 West Gladys, where our church is really going and booming, and God's spirit has really been powerful there, doing a lot of things this summer. But anyway, so he preached a word Sunday, and motivation, you know, I teach the young children on Sundays, for three Sundays out of the month, and this Sunday I had them, but we came up earlier than we probably should have. pastor stayed up longer than he was gonna stay up, and so I got to hear the tail end of his sermon, and motivation, staying motivated, was just like one of the things, and I actually got such a blessing from what he said, from what I heard, you know, even the next day. It's just odd how you take God, you take the word, and you, if you apply it correctly and put it in your heart, you can take it with you, and that particular word could be yours for the week. So, I wanted to take that. So that's my little snippet. So I guess I invited you guys to church. If you don't have a church home, please join us at New Dimensions Church. I told you about my week. Told you about what's going on with me, and now I'm gonna get right into the bed and the breakfast. Of what I love doing. My grandbabies know all the time. Grandson number 7, Jonah, and he's 3, and he's one of the smartest in the house. But he knows what his grandma does all the time. Granny is always at the computer, he says, and he's so computer literate. But he knows Granny is writing her book or Granny is doing her work. So he's like, "What you doing, Granny? You writing your book? You doing your work?" Yeah, so he knows that. So everybody knows that that's what Granny does. And I wanted to share with you guys some of the book. I'm going to go right into it. I'm not going to explain. You guys know me. Tribulations of Love has been out for, it came out in 2013. And so I'm actually on book 3 right now. And one of the purposes, one of the reasons why I do my book readings and that type of thing is to keep the interest going. When I pushed it out there, it was the topic was kind of pivotal in the Christian community, basically because it is a mildly erotic romance drama based on the lives of Christian couples. But God gave it to me for a purpose, and I use it to touch and build relationships. And so what the premise behind Tribulations of Love is as real as it can get in a story of people who I've made up in my head. But the stories touch on relationship issues, fidelity, broken trust, domestic violence, a few more health issues, and that type of thing. But what we do in the story is we find the resolutions that lead to spiritual healing as well as emotional healing, and thus bringing the couple together. It's all based around the whole premise of Hebrews 13:4, which reminds us that marriage is honorable in all and the bed undefiled. Primarily, a lot of the times, I've been talking about this lately, a lot of times couples get into this twist in their mind where they are so totally confused. I heard a man of God say recently, and I was listening to what his little sermon or his rebuttal to someone, or he answered someone's question, and he said he spoke on oral sex, and he went to Hebrews 13:4, and I'm cheering, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he spoke on anal sex, and he said how it was not of God. And I'm like, oh, this is, see, people get so, and this is just from what I have learned, and you have to take it as you learn it, okay? But people, when God says to you that marriage is honorable and all, and the bed is undefiled, he means that. He means that. So what happens with you, now if you are being forced to do something, that's different. That's a totally different thing. That is not a God. But if this is something that two consenting adults have agreed, this is how we want to do, what we're going to do. So we're going to put our toes together, and we're going to clap our toes every night until we laugh and smile in each other's face, and this is how we're going to make sure our bedroom stays undefiled. I don't have to report that to Pastor Deacon Brother Johnny, because this is what my bedroom doors are closed, and this is what we're doing. And so I think a lot of people get caught up into, you know, this is not clean. This is, you know, this is not, I'm not being a woman of God if I say this or if I do this. I'm not being a man of God if I ask my wife to do this and say this. And then, you know, my whole play on everything is that whenever there is a way for Satan to come in and cause destruction or cause confusion He does it. And that, again, could be set up as spiritual warfare. So the whole premise of reflection, I mean, reflection, tribulations of love, is to break down barriers, open up communication, and to show couples and in the light of a spirituality, these people are spiritual, and how they get through these certain situations. I have, so I'm going to read a chapter, then I'm going to go and go to a couple callers if you want to ask some questions, or if you want to, comment on the book, please feel free to. I wear Teflon on my chest and shoulders when I'm doing stuff. So even if you have something that you read and it did not stick with you, or, howsoever, please, because as my audience, I want to hear from you guys. So if you give me a second, I'm going to do what I love doing. I'm going to read the stuff that I wrote that came out of my mind. Tribulations of love. Hey, I got a couple callers. Hey, guys, hold on for a few seconds. And just again, if you want to ask a question or something, feel free. Just hold on. I'm going to go through this first chapter, Tribulations of Love. Kia Montgomery was deep into her morning routine of reading her Bible verses when her husband, Dr. Will Montgomery, called. Her commitment to routine was another reason he loved her so much. Being raised in a home with a grandfather who happened to be a stern Baptist preacher taught Kia that you gave God thanks and read his word for guidance before your day started. She had pulled away from many of her granddad's teachings since he was out of her life, but that one grew on her. Will, I have taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I have washed my feet. Must I soil them again? An exhausted Dr. Will Montgomery laughed out loud as he pressed the elevator button and leaned against the wall of the maternity floor he just worked a double on. He was dead on his feet, but the sound of his wife's voice stimulated him. Is that what it says? He asked. My lover thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my lover, and my hands dripped with myrrh. She continued to read as seductively as one could without joining his lap. Will nods politely and smiles at the two older African-American nurses as the elevator door opens and they wave at him. In the 2 years since he joined the staff, it has not amazed him how many women had come on to him. In the past 6 months, since he's been married, the numbers seem to increase. Seems some women are attracted to a man with a wedding band. He was Kia's first and only, and she kept him busy. Love, do me a favor before I forget, he chuckled. Make sure that Jasmine gets $20 for her cheerleading skirt. She texted me last night. There should be some cash in my nightstand. Her whisper interrupts him. Blow on my garden that its fragrance may spread. He laughs out loud. You aren't listening to me at all, are you? I'll see you in a minute. Kia chuckles as she hangs up the phone. She was the baby sister in the family of three girls and was always used to getting her way. Her older sisters, Lori and Priscilla, felt responsible for her early in life after losing their mom to what was rumored as a drug overdose. Kia never knew her, but remembers small things about her. One, primarily that she had a beautiful voice. People tell her all the time that she sings like her mother. Raised in a strict religious home by their grandparents, Mother Bella and Thomas, church was all they were allowed to know. When they got a chance to leave the house, they all took it. It seemed all their exit strategies lied on them leaving to be with the man. Kia fell in love with the first and only man she had ever met outside of the church, Will Montgomery. He was charismatic and attractive, a true gentleman in all his ways with her, and had a tall sense of humor. He was focused, determined, extremely educated, and down to earth. Everything Grandma told her she should ask God for in a husband. She was drawn to his personality, but hooked by his kiss. Standing 6'3 at 245 pounds, Dr. Will was Kia's vision of a sexy chocolate man. His muscular upper body balanced with his size 34 waistline, his dark brown complexion and shoulder length jet black pristine locks made him a true vision to behold. His thin mustache laid on top of one of the best assets she thought he had, his lips. He was a loving husband, well-endowed lover, great provider, dedicated father, successful OBGYN, and an awesome kisser. His lips have charmed her since day one. The first time they kissed, she was entranced. She kissed maybe three boys in her life, and two of them were dares. She couldn't wait to tell her sisters. Even though she was now away in college, she still told them everything she did. He made her body tingle, she said to them, as they were on their every other day three-way call. Priscilla laughed and told her to keep her legs closed. Lori told her that she had fallen so hard for him because she had no true love experience. She agreed with Lori but enjoyed how his kisses made her feel. Her grandmother taught them that sex and all those feelings were for married people. Never give yourself to any man but your husband, she would tell the girl. Kia tried to wait, but she wanted to explore being with him. She wanted to try the things she'd heard her roommate, Lachelle, talk about. He was a gentleman, and he waited until she was ready. When it happened, she fell entirely in love with him. She had only been with him twice before she was late. She was never late. She cried. He comforted her, and she told her sister. Grandma was disappointed when she found out that Kia had gotten the child, but was accepting of what had happened. Her grandfather was livid, saying, with no uncertain terms, would another seed of his succumb to the wiles of Satan? This is not proper behavior for a young woman. This is not proper behavior for a young woman of God, he screamed, and definitely not my grandchild. If you have this child, it would be disrespecting God and me. You need to fix it. Yelling at her and tossing her clothes from her dorm room closet into a suitcase. Where is he? Where is the demon that did this to you? She refused to say so. He stormed out of her room, saying God would lead him right to him. She didn't know if it were God or one of her friends, but someone pointed her grandfather right to the graduate fraternity house Will lived in. Friends joked about it later, saying that Will's well-built frame didn't hold a match to the tower of a man that stood before him and introduced himself as Reverend Earl Thomas, Kia's grandfather. Looking down at Will, Reverend Thomas declared him the devil and asked him what he planned on doing since he stole Kia's innocence and impregnated her. Will stood, never backing down, and told him he would handle his responsibility. He had no desire to leave her in that situation alone and that his child would never need anything from him. Reverend Thomas said, "You are a demon sent from hell to devour my daughter's Christian walk. And if you think I'm going to let you succeed, you are a crazy demon walking around." It was your cute boy walking around with your cute boy look and nothing but that to offer her. How are you going to raise a child when you have nothing? Will told him not to worry about it. It wasn't his problem. He told Will that not only was he her grandfather, but he was the man taking care of her, which entitled him to make decisions for her. He was deciding that she would be getting rid of that child and moving back home immediately. Standing toe-to-toe with Reverend Thomas, Will made it clear, "The child that she's carrying is mine, and that entitles me to make decisions for it. Reverend Thomas gave a hard laugh and pointed his finger at Will, declaring, "From now on, young man, Kia is your responsibility too." And he turned and walked away. Kia was crushed. He'd forbidden her from his home. She was not to contact her grandmother and was not allowed in his church. Her presence was an embarrassment to his ministry, he told her sister. Will promised he would never leave her, and she believed him. Will's parents were touched by Kia's story and felt they had to do what they could to help her. So over the summer, they let her stay in the guest room of their home and allowed her to work the store with Will to make money. They encouraged her to continue school even after Jasmine was born. They were so excited about their first grandchild, and they loved Kia. They told her she could stay with them as long as she wanted. Their home was her and Jasmine. So she joined their church and became a daughter to them. Kia loved them but missed her own family. She would occasionally have Will drive her to visit her sisters. Lori and David told her that she and Jasmine could live with them, but they were struggling and she wanted to be with Will. Priscilla had gotten married and moved to Mississippi. To keep in touch with Kia and Lori, Priscilla bought cell phones for them. Kia's grandmother came up one time with Lori, and Kia cried like a baby when she left. She thanked Mr. and Mrs. Montgomery for looking out for her granddaughter and apologized to Will for her husband's behavior. They embraced her with Southern love and hospitality. Kia thought they were the funniest couple in the world and felt blessed that they were there for her and her daughter. Will, on the other hand, has started to feel smothered, and his attention started to shift more to his internship. He had begun to spend more time away from Kia and Jasmine, saying that he had to be at the clinic. She never thought anything of it. He was working hard to become an OBGYN, and he curing their future. One day, Kia borrowed Mrs. Montgomery's car and drove up to the campus to surprise Will. She and Jasmine sat outside of the clinic waiting for him. When he finally came out, he was walking next to a female laughing, holding her hand and tickling her. The female fell into Will's arm and he kissed her. Kia could not believe what she knew she saw. She sat frozen and watched him walk her to her car, hand in hand. Once she got to the car, he held the door for her, kissed her again, and waited until she drove off. Kia's heart ached. He kissed her. She'd been living at his parents' house like their daughter, and he's been here creating another life with another female. Why would he do that to her, to them? He promised her that he would marry her as soon as his residency was up. She'd given up her life and her with her family, believing him. She felt her heart pounding and her tears warming up as Jasmine's cry broke the silence. Will turned, seemingly in slow motion, as he heard a baby's cry and spotted a glimpse of familiarity, his mom's shiny red Cadillac. Kia opened the door and stepped out, and he could do nothing but shake his head. "Damn, did she see what I just did?" is what his expression said. Kia answered it, "But so who is she?" The knock on the bedroom door brought her back to her mind. And to the current world. In this world, after waiting 8 years, and regardless of mistakes made, he was now her husband, and they were in love. Jasmine, now 11 years old, pushed open the door, fully dressed in her school uniform and holding papers for her mom to sign. Kia sat up as Jasmine climbs in the bed next to her. "Good morning, Mom. Dad on his way?" Yeah, he takes both the pen and the paper from her and motions for her to turn around. I asked him for $20 for my cheerleading skirt. Coach Richards said we had to have it in by Friday, but I didn't want to forget, so I texted Dad last night. He said, "Ask you." Kia uses Jasmine's back to sign the papers. "That's what your allowance is for, Jasmine." "Ma, seriously?" Kia hands her the signed papers. "Yeah, seriously. It's just $20, Ma." Jasmine takes the papers from Kia and starts out of the bed. "Then go to your bank, grab a 20, and pay your bill." Kia laughs as she opens the drawer on the nightstand and hands Jasmine a folded $20 bill. Jasmine dances in the bed with the money. "Thanks, Ma. Don't thank me. Thank your father." See, Dad understands the economic state that befalls me as a kid. "No, you're spoiled. Go eat your cereal." "I packed my lunch," Jasmine informed her as she walked out of the room. "Cool, I better go check it." Kia started out of the bed behind her. That chapter was establishing pretty much who the backstory for Kia and Will. And it when I wrote it, I was thinking a lot about how young love sometimes brings people to forks and roads, and if you're not, if the other head is thinking for you, sometimes you'll do some things without thinking, and can get caught up. I was a teen mom, and so making decisions about life were kind of challenging when life was just new to you anyway. So I can relate with her on that. But not only that, she was a young mom who was raised to be a Christian, and she was raised in a house that said that what she had done was a flaw against her teachings and thus against God. And so the stigma that she was carrying now was that not only has she disappointed herself because she had to stop going to school for a while to raise the child, but she had disappointed God and she had disappointed her family, who was that was all that she had, was her grandma, grandpa, and her sister. And so she had that to deal with. And so what she in turn did was turned really strongly to, she built her relationship with Christ really strongly because it was really important to her that she have something that she felt was solid. And in this, by the time we get to this, the full story of Kia, Kia has been without Will for the 8 or 9 years. And she has really, her prayer has been to be with the man that she had given herself to. And I know this seems really crazy to some people, but those soul ties with that first love can be really crazy sometimes, especially if that person happens to you have a child with that person. If you really are in love, then some people, they just actually slipped up, and that was God bringing the child in. Wasn't no love involved in that, but if the situation is different, if it's really similar to what was going on with Key and Will, and then as you see, I mean, it can be, that relationship can be really strong, and it's just how, what I did with the story was showed how they, even though things happened, they still they decided to do their to let their co-parenting skills be the social interaction that they have, and thus create a civilized union for the child. And actually, that is what kept their relationship when they weren't a couple together. So my caller left. Okay, so I'm just gonna go to Nick. So I hope you guys are enjoying it. I love these backstories. It's like you just, I think that backstories help you understand people, period. I think that that's a lot of what's not happening in relationships now, is that nobody's taking their time to actually date and court and tell their backstory and tell, you know, and because we are ashamed of it, or we just don't realize that it's important enough. But you know, I would want to know, you know, some of the stuff that has gone on in a man's life, that if I were, you know, gonna marry this guy. I mean, I'm happily married now. I've been with this guy for, let me see, when was Jesus' graduation? No, but for at least 30 years. And so, but even with being with him, like, I knew a lot of stuff about him, you know, prior to falling in love with him, which helped me to fall in love with him. And we had built stories, but we had our own backstories that we knew about with each other. I think that's really, really important. And so I made a big deal out of letting their backstories be known. Chapter 2, Lori was the middle sister to Kia and Priscilla. She was the true balancer. Multitasking was part of her morning routine. On this morning, Lori's kitchen was as busy as it always is on a school day. While Lori calmly places sandwiches and juice boxes in her kids' lunch bags, David runs around trying to get them rounded up to leave. He always wondered how Lori handled all of them with such patience. "Come on, kids, get in the car, and I'll be right there," he tells them as he stands in front of Lori for her approval of his outfit. He had a new client that he was meeting with, and he needed to look his best. She gave him her nod of approval, signed the trip slip her 12-year-old son, Rio, left on the counter, and fixed her 6-year-old daughter, Anaya's bow that she had placed in her head in a show of independence. And she did all of that in one sweep. Holding the back door open, she kissed every one of them and told them all to have a good day. "Love you. I'll call you after my meeting. Love you, too. See you, Mom," Rio says. He got to the car. Before he could say anything, David was at it again. "Put that seatbelt on, Rio, and stop picking with your sister." She smiled. "See you, kids." The sound of David pulling off was like music to her ears. It was time for her morning coffee. Then the phone rings. She glanced at her caller ID and knew if she didn't answer it, Priscilla would call her cell. So she answered it. Priscilla, the oldest sister, was definitely the one to deal with. Trials she managed to overcome in her life made her tough on the surface, but underneath, she was like putty. She had married young against their grandmother's wishes. Her husband, Herbert, was 20 years her senior. Grandma never liked him. As it turned out, she had just cause. Early in the marriage, Herbert moved Priscilla to Mississippi to live close to their mother, my brown girl. She had been ill, and she wanted to take care of her. He wanted to take care of her. Priscilla loved how he cared for his mother and knew that he had a lot of stress on him. So the first time he hit her, she thought nothing of it. She would never talk about it to her sisters. But Grandma always felt something was going on with Scylla. One day, Grandma made them drive her up to see Priscilla unannounced. Said she couldn't sleep, and God told her that Scylla needed her. Granny's suspicions were confirmed. Priscilla's face was bandaged, hiding a scar from being pushed through their bedroom window a week earlier. That was enough for Grandma to make her come home. Priscilla stayed away from Herbert about 2 weeks before she went back home to him. She told Grandma he was her source. He took really good care of her, and he needed her to help him with his mother while he ran the car lot. He'd apologized and promised he would never put his hand on her again. Herbert owned one of the largest luxury car dealerships in town for an African American in the South. He was doing well. A year went by, and he held to his promise. The day of their grandmother's funeral, Herbert's true being rose, and at the repast, he slapped Priscilla so hard for hugging an old friend till she lost a tooth. She swore that she fell on a toy on the steps, but a neighbor saw it and held to his story. The family was heated. Priscilla wouldn't let anyone confront him, and when Herbert gave her the choice to stay, she slowly got in the car with him and left. That was the last time the family saw him alive. 2 months later, it was reported that Herbert, in a heavy, drunken state, fell down a flight of stairs in their home and broke his neck. His mother was at the top of the stairs when it happened. Priscilla had a black eye and a cut on her neck. It was believed that his mother came out of her as an Alzheimer's state of mind long enough to stop him, her son, from killing Priscilla. The reports say it was accidental, and that was where everyone left it. From that, Priscilla received double immunity on Herbert's insurance policy, and all their bills were paid in full. She left Mississippi and brought her mother-in-law back to Chicago with her, opened 2 luxury lots, and hired a live-in nurse to care for Mama. If her grandma were alive, she'd say God don't like ugly, and she would be right. Priscilla stood in her bedroom closet trying to decide which shoe from her array of choices went best with the outfit she had on while talking on her speakerphone to Lori. She tried on an open-toe black pump and a wedged heel, black and white closed-toe stiletto. Open or close, she asked Lori. What? Open or close? Should I wear the open-toe or closed-toe shoe today? Lori laughed. I don't care. Open. Priscilla takes off the open-toe shoe and puts on the other closed-toe shoe. Thanks. So what time is Lachelle coming in? Because Thursday is open mic night at Arrington, and I was thinking we could hang out there. Lori placed her dish rag on the sink. That sounds like fun. I believe her flight gets in a few minutes after 5. Let's ask her tonight. What time is the call tonight? 6 or 7? Priscilla steps in front of her full-length mirror and admires her choice of outfit for the day. It's always 6, and you ask me that all the time. Whatever, just bring it up tonight, Lori laughed and stirred her coffee. Hey, I got tons of RSVPs for you, and the caterer is tripping. We may have to go with someone else. From downstairs, Priscilla hears Sheila, the housekeeper, coming in and turning off the alarm. Let's talk about it tonight. Sheila's coming in, and I need to holler at her before I get out of here. Smooches, back to you. Both ladies hang up. At her stove in her New York loft, Kia's best friend and college roommate, now turned attorney Lachelle Stevens, stood sipping her coffee and listening to the morning news on the TV, waiting for her boyfriend to get his breakfast. For the past year, she had been dating the judge, Judge Edward McKnight, sexy, distinguished gentleman with authority. She had found him extremely hot and flirted with him whenever he made eye contact with her at work. She knew he was married and didn't care. He was Judge McKnight, always in control, and she wanted him. She loved the man that could control her and loved it even more if he were married. Married men meant they could be sent home. She enjoyed his company, but loved her space more. That is why she says she'll never get married. Her friends always tell her it's more than that, but that is what she insisted. Didn't matter now. She exhaled, sipped her coffee, and watched Ed make his way down the spiral staircase from her bedroom and walks past her, fixing his ties. This part of the book actually is was so much fun for me to to write because it was part of a production that I was writing for a TV show, and worked with a friend of mine, a couple of friends, and we were shooting this for a webisode. And so when I was writing this, I told them actually a couple of days ago that I used them as my couple. He is a strong, towered, nice-looking man. He's a man of authority. Lachelle is just as stubborn as he is. And her place of authority keeps her, her place of authority keeps her in love with him, because to her, him being married means that she can be with him, but she doesn't have to take him home with her. And that to her is what's important. So, back to chapter 2. His caramel-colored skin seemed to make his orange shirt pop. She wasn't sure if it was residue from the tremendous night of steamy sex they had just experienced, or if his bald head had made him gorgeous today. Either way, she was so ready to break him off a piece right in the kitchen. Ed grabs a slice of bacon off her plate and puts it in his mouth. She swipes a crumb from the bacon off his face and kisses him. He walks her away from the stove, still kissing her, and leans her against the counter. Lifting onto the counter, his cell phone rings. He stops kissing Lachelle long enough to check it. She pulls him away as she sees the wife on his display, and he goes to answer it. "Really? Really?" she said as she jumped down from the counter. Ed hit her on the butt. "I gotta go anyway. Love you." He walks behind her and kisses her neck as he answers the phone. "Hey, baby," he says as he walks out the door, turning to blow Lachelle a kiss. "Missed you, too. Look, my flight just got in, so I'm going to go straight to the office." He had just played the card she needed him to play, she said to herself as she waves him off. His time in her life had been over a while ago. She was just waiting for the right exit wound to play on. Her trip to Chicago for Lori and David's 15-year wedding anniversary was going to be her out. She would play the hurting girlfriend that needed space and be done with his shenanigans. She continued to crunch on her bacon. Work was calling, and she had to put on her $400-an-hour face. From her kitchen window, he could see Will pulling up the driveway. She could tell by the way his head bobbed that he was jamming his music loud. She knew her husband. That meant he was truly fatigued. He was going to have to weather his tired storm because she was determined to play her fantasy all the way through. She folded Jasmine's lunch bag and handed it to her, interrupting for a few seconds the TV show she was watching. Takes a sip of tea and positions herself there so when he opened the door and walked past her, he would have to brush against her. That was part of her, one of her approaches. Wake up his senses. Her sister Lori taught her that one. Lachelle told her to note the scent that is alluring to him and only wear it when you want some. So she made sure that she dabbed every place his lips would go on it with a touch of that scent. Competition is rough, and a married woman has to do all she can to keep the fire in her marriage, is the advice her oldest sister Priscilla told her. All that advice seemed to work, and since she was still kind of new at the whole marriage thing, she tried it all. She planted herself close to the door, exhaled, and waited for him to enter. Jasmine took the last spoonful of cereal and stood to leave just as Will walked in. "Hey, Dad." "Hey, Princess." Will stepped into the door and, as planned, walked right past Kia's extended butt. He stopped, placed his hand on her butt, and on a cue, she turned into his kiss. "Hey." The screen door opens as Jasmine's best friend, Melody, walks in. Hi, Dr. Will, Auntie Kia. Come on, Jazzy, the bus is almost at the corner. Bye, Dr. Will, Auntie Kia. Jasmine grabs her book bag and heads towards the door, stopping only to kiss Will on the cheek and wave at Kia. See you later, and thanks, Dad, for that change. Will's mind and heart was already undressing Kia, who had stopped rubbing his had not stopped rubbing his back since he kissed her. Yeah, okay, Jasmine, lock that door behind you. As the door slammed shut, he whispered in Kia's ear, because I want your mama to let me blow on that fragrance she had me rush home for. Yeah, that is chapter one and chapter two of Tribulations of Love. And in those two chapters, it starts off as, you know, everybody is loving each other and holding to having fun and letting marriage be honorable. And even with this couple, with the exception of my friends here, Lachelle and Ed, and Ed has his own little thing that he's going through, and Lachelle too, but that's one of the traces. And you know, there are people that are out there like that. I mean, infidelity is, there's a reason to infidelity, and that's not going to be my research, but I can find it out. But there's a reason to infidelity on both ends. Lachelle was, you know, she wasn't married, but she didn't want anybody but married men, and she made that known. And hers, as we go along in the story, well, you're going to buy the book and you're going to read it and you're going to find out what hers was. And you can buy the book from Amazon.com. It's Tribulations of Love. There are two books out there now, Tribulations of Love, Through the Good and the Bad, and Tribulations of Love, Learning the Language. The one that we are reading from tonight is Through the Good and the Bad, and that's book one. And when you see this, the purple cover. I tried to go along the same flair with just keeping them consistent so that the covers look almost alike, but the color of the covers change. So this first one is purple, and then the second one is red, and the third one I think is going to be blue. Yeah, it's a little calmer. A little calmer. But so I'm really hoping you are enjoying it. We have another like 10 minutes. I'm going to try to get through chapter 3 in this 10 minutes because I do want to leave you guys on some kind of a cliffhanger. Or should I go straight to where I know there's a cliffhanger at? How about we do chapter 4? Because chapter 3, yes. Yeah, so we'll do chapter 4 so we can leave you on some kind of cliffhanger. So that'll give you guys more reason to go to Amazon.com and purchase this book. And when you purchase it, when you buy the book, if you have a Kindle, you can, like, download it immediately, start reading it then. If you already are a Prime customer, I think if you buy this book, you can download the second one for free. I have some deals out there because, to me, I just want to get the story told. I want people to read it again. To me, it's all about healing, finding resolutions that lead to healing spiritually as well as emotionally, and building couples and strengthening couples again, because God honors marriage. He truly honors marriage. And even, you know, the secular world, even in the church, there's just a thing now with how people are married. And you know, I don't get into, like, the same-sex marriage and all that good stuff, because that's just not what I don't get into those type of arguments and those debates. I go by what God says, and, you know, that's, to me, I have to go by that word. I'm not going to argue with anybody who chooses to marry same-sex. I'm just going to point you back to the word, because my whole point is to study to show myself approved. A workman that is not going to be embarrassed and not going to embarrass God, and to rightfully defy God's word, which is true. So that's how I stand with those issues. You know, I'm not running for any political office, so it doesn't matter how I feel anyway. But anyway, so in my last few minutes, we're going to read through chapter 4, give you guys a cliffhanger, and then give you a little tidbit of where you can get the book at again and where I'll be reading this book and selling it. I think I'm somewhere on the 30th. I am. Yes. Okay. Chapter 4. So we were doing chapter 2 where we kind of met everybody. So 1 and 2, we met everybody. And then chapter 3, if you go through chapter 3, then it kind of gets a little bit more about Kia going to work and bragging about putting Will to sleep. Lachelle and Ed's conversation after Lachelle gets on him pretty much for excuse me, for making love or to his wife over the phone while he was kissing on her is what she said. So they go through their little couple thing and they make up in his chambers. And so in chapter 4, it starts off with Will picking up Jasmine from their mother's house. 8 minutes, let's do this. The path of light around Will's parents' front yard seemed to brighten the block. Will wanted his parents to move closer to him in the suburbs when he bought his home, but they loved where they lived. It was close to their friends, their church, and the mall. They knew everybody in a 5-block span. Jasmine loved being with them. So he arranged to have the school bus drop her off at their home, and either he or Kia would pick her up afterward. His mother wouldn't take money for watching Jasmine, so Will just put money in a fund for them. Financially, they were secure, but being the only child, he felt the need to make sure they didn't want for anything. Will and Jasmine leave as his mother. Grandma B, as Jasmine penned her, excuse me, holds the door talking to them. Call me when you make it home, son. And don't forget to give Kia that recipe. She wanted me to email it to her, but that takes too long. Granny, I thought I showed you how to do that. Remind me to show you tomorrow. Love you, Granny. Jasmine kisses Grandma. Love you too, baby. All right, see you, Mom, and thanks again. Will hugs his mom and Jasmine runs to the truck. What time are you coming for Dad tomorrow? Mom asks. 4 o'clock in the a.m. hour. I text him already. You know him. He loves fishing, and he will be sitting right here waiting for you in the morning. I know, right? Will laughs and waves to his mom. Later. Jasmine has chirped the truck and started getting in by the time he got there. He opens his door and tosses Jasmine's book bag in the back seat. So you too grown to let your dad hold your door for you, huh? He says as he puts on his seatbelt. My bad. Hey, Dad, I got an A on my science test today. She blurted out just as Will's phone beeps. He looks at the phone and notices a voicemail was left. That's what I'm talking about. Good job, Jazzy. Proud of you. Checking to see who left the voicemail, he turns on the car. He notices the message is from his office line, so he checks it. Jasmine continues to speak in the background. How was your day, Dad? She asks. Good. Hope you're hungry because we're meeting Mom at the restaurant. Cool. Can we stop by the mall on the way home? I am about out of accessories. Plus, Melody has a new phone case. And she said she got in the mall. Jasmine said as she buckled her seatbelt. Jazzy, we won't be shopping today. Jasmine pulls her earphones out of her bag and places them on as Will pulls out of the parking space and into the street traffic. His cell phone rings and he answers his earpiece. Dr. Montgomery speaking. Is this the infamous Dr. Sexy? I can't believe you answered the phone. I was ready to leave my speech. Will chuckles. He recognizes the voice of his ex-girlfriend, Dr. Anita Brooks. What's good, Miss Lady? I'm in town for a few days. Did a tour of Columbia for the training session I'll be hosting in a few months. I saw that. Proud of you. Mad that I wasn't asked to be on the panel, but he chuckled. Didn't think you'd have time, she exhaled. Can we talk? I really need to see you before I leave. That is, unless you're tied into a curfew. Wouldn't want to get you in trouble or anything. Now, you, of all people, should know I don't do cartwheels. I'm actually on my way to dinner with my wife, with my family. Just picked Jasmine up from mom. Oh, tell Jasmine I said hi. You have jokes, right? Let me see what tomorrow looks like and hit you back. How long are you here? Awkward pause, and then she said, long enough to introduce you and your wife to our son. Will brought the truck to a slow stop and pulled out of traffic. Jasmine was so into her music that she hadn't paid him any attention. He leaned back in the seat. Will, you there? She asked. I am. You have a son? He whispered. We have a son, she said. But I'll let that sit with you until we can get together. Let's make it soon. I'll let you look at your calendar. I know you are a busy man. Call me. She hangs up the phone. Will leans on the window of his truck with a solid blank stare. What the hell, he thought. How could she have had a child fathered by me and not say anything? Daddy, Daddy, why did we stop? Is something wrong with the truck? Jasmine brought him out of his fog. He put the truck back in drive and started on his way. We good. The sisters and Lachelle are on their weekly planning committee conference call. Lori and David are preparing to celebrate their 15th year anniversary, and they wanted to do it large. Priscilla acted as their wedding coordinator when they got married, so she was grandfathered into the role of party planner for their anniversary gala. She always wanted to be an event planner, but Herbert's tantrums discouraged that. Occasionally, she volunteered to create an atmosphere for someone's event, and always she was proud of her work. At home in her kitchen, Lori stands in the refrigerator, grabbing items for her meal while on the phone with Lachelle, Kia, and Priscilla. Shell, you took the bracelet, Lori laughed as Shell recounted the shameless event at the judge's chamber. Priscilla sits back on the couch with an iPad in her lap, sipping a wine glass. You know she did. She could have bought her own, but had to be trifling. Lachelle entered her house, closed the door behind herself, kicks off her shoes, and drops her purse on the couch. I took it and I'm wearing it to the party. Stop playing. I'm so geeked about coming to Chicago, seeing my girls, and shopping. I need to get me a northern boo. How are the men there? Lori stopped mixing her cornbread. Help her, Jesus. Kia, still laughing while in the booth waiting for Will and Jasmine. The waitress walks over and brings her drink. Thanks, my family is pulling up now, so give me about 10 more minutes to order, please, she tells the waitress. She nods and walks away as Kia gets back on the phone conversation with the ladies. I'm back. Will and Jasmine are not walking in. Did we decide anything while I was gone? Priscilla strolled through her iPad. We decided that you need to learn to cook. You're always in somebody's restaurant. Did you ever use those cooking lessons I paid good money for when you got married? Kia laughs as Will and Jasmine walk up. Yes, I did. I gotta go. My people have arrived. Kia and her sisters were excited about planning Lori's event, and unbeknownst to them, the day or two before, where their lives, everybody's lives would change. They think they're planning life changing or life encouraging event for her sister when they were all approaching some type of pivotal life change. These things you will read. Hope you enjoyed my reading. These things you will hear about in when you will see them when you read Tribulations of Love. Next month, I will pick up from where I was and continue to read it just to give you guys another little snippet of this virtual book read. Thank you for sitting with me today, and I hope this was enough to get you out there to spend your little $12 to get your book from Amazon.com. It's Tribulations of Love, Through the Good and the Bad. That's the first book written by Lynn Parrott. And then Tribulations of Love, Learning the Lessons is the second one. I'm going to go. My time is out. Love you guys with the love of the Lord. Next week we're going to have Ramona Muhammad on, the coach for women, a life coach for women. I want you guys to be encouraged. I want you guys to know that what God has for you is for you this week. Be motivated and let the Lord continue to use you. I love you guys.
I just want to tell you what I think
and
about you. Yeah.